On a reporting trip in Pakistan last month, New York Times reporter Carlotta Gall was physically assaulted by Pakistani intelligence agents. They broke into her hotel room, punched her in the head and face, and threw her to the ground. The reason, she was told, she asked too many questions and visited parts of Pakistan considered off-limits. Her photographer was also detained. Carlotta Gall is on the line with us now from her vacation home in Johannesburg, South Africa. Carlotta, welcome to the program, and how you doing?
Thank you. I'm fine. The bruises have healed.
You described the attack in an article for the newspaper this week. What exactly happened on December 19th?
Well, we'd finished our reporting trip. Actually, I'd even booked my hotel, my flight back. We'd been there 5 days, and then in the evening, my photographer was detained, and he called me and said people had come into his hotel room and grabbed him and all his belongings and his computer. And they wanted to talk to me, and I said, I can't talk to them, but I'll see what I can do. And so I was making calls when they then burst into my room, four men, quite aggressive, very aggressive and very angry. And they grabbed all my things, cell phones, computer, notebooks. They searched my suitcase and belongings. And they said I was there without permission. They said I wasn't allowed to visit a part of town that I had been visiting, which was incorrect. I had full accreditation and visas, and I was allowed to walk around the town and visit.
This was in Quetta?
This is in Quetta in Pakistan, which is a border town close to Afghanistan, where a lot of Taliban insurgents who are fighting in Afghanistan rest up, and and they're known to hang out there, and so you can find them and so on. So I was looking into the whole Taliban insurgency story, and then they said, you're not permitted to interview Taliban. And in fact, I hadn't actually interviewed Taliban. You know, they are lying low, and I hadn't found any. But I had been poking around and talking to families of young Pakistanis who'd gone in to fight and who had died in Afghanistan. So we were on that sort of story, and that was clearly very sensitive for the Pakistani authorities. So they made it very clear they didn't want me doing that.
These men took your notebooks and your computers as well. The sources with whom you'd spoken were then visited by Pakistani intelligence themselves a little bit later, and though your stuff was all returned, right?
Everything was returned that night, and we got on very quickly to government people in Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan, in particular the Ministry of Information, and they did help us a lot, and I think they got on to the right people because my belongings were returned after several hours, and the photographer was released after 5 hours, sort of at 1:30 in the morning. He was told to leave town immediately, but that seemed to be all over, and then gradually after the next days, we realized they'd been checking what was on our computer. They'd obviously saved everything. They'd gone through my notebook. They'd gone through my cell phone numbers. So they started visiting the people who I'd interviewed and who'd worked with me or even who'd just met with me and cooperated on the work I was doing. So that was quite nasty. That was quite sinister, I felt.
At any time when they first burst through the door, did the name of Daniel Pearl go through your mind?
Actually, no, because I instantly knew who these guys were. This was government harassment over a story that the Pakistani government doesn't want going on. Now, the government say they are trying to control us and watch us and monitor what journalists are doing because they're worried about what happened to Daniel Pearl happening again. But I'm very careful. If I go and visit a family who might be sympathetic to the jihad or to Islamic extremism, I never go alone and I never... I'm careful and I test the ground. I know what I'm doing. So that was never a fear for me. I mean, I had visited some families like that who seemed to be quite hardline, but there was never any concern for my safety because there is a tradition of hospitality in Pakistan. And so if you do it the right way, you can be pretty sure of a safe reception. This was very clearly, what happened to me was very clearly a government harassment operation. So I was also not very scared, and I never thought they would hit me, knock me over. But that was a big shock.
And getting back to the heart of the story, obviously the Taliban insurgency in Afghanistan has been steadily increasing, especially the last couple of years. And if you look at a map, there's no place where these people can be resting, re-equipping, training, getting the resources they need to conduct a fairly sizable war in Afghanistan other than Pakistan.
Well, that's clear. You just have to look at the long border, which, let's acknowledge, is very hard to police, very hard to stop smugglers and others crossing any of the mountain passes or any of the desert huge expanses. So that's clear. But what we were trying to look at is the government support? Are they really allowed to sit in the town and rest up? You know, it's very easy if you're an insurgent to fight if you're sure your family is safe, if you're sure you've got somewhere to go to get to hospital, and so on. And so this is what the Taliban has had a great advantage of. Taliban, who are fighting American troops and NATO troops now in southern and southeastern Afghanistan, they go in, but they know their families are safe. And the Afghans don't have that luxury. And it's become very, very clear in the last years, but especially 2006, that they were operating with a huge advantage because they have safe haven in Pakistan.
And your article describing what's been going on suggests that at least elements within Pakistani intelligence believe that, as opposed to the president's stated goal of cooperating with the United States and others on the war on terrorism, that they must look forward to the day when the Western armies leave Afghanistan.
That's the feeling you get, that the Pakistan mindset of the government is that this is our backyard, and one day American troops are going to leave and NATO troops are going to leave, and so we need to be ahead of the game and be controlling things. And instead of the professed aim of the Pakistani government is to have a stable, democratic Afghanistan, which will be a good neighbor. But in fact, the policy that seems to be being operated is we want to control Afghanistan. We want to have a government that is subservient and controlled by us and therefore a good buffer state for Pakistan that secures Pakistan's security. So it's there's a contradiction there, which any journalist has to investigate, and that's really what we were doing.
There's also there's that mission of state, if you will, that rationale. You were also looking into the theory that at least some of these people basically support the Taliban because they agree with the Taliban.
There's no doubt that the public, general public in Pakistan, in that area, the southeastern border of Afghanistan, do support the Taliban. But it's really because there's an incredible feeling of support for... It's a religious belief that the foreigners are occupiers and we must support them in a jihad against the foreign occupiers. But a lot of the Afghans will tell you, no, we don't want to fight anymore. We want some peace. So there's quite a difference when you cross the border. And I think it's encouraged in Pakistan by the religious parties and by members of the government. Certainly the provincial governments are very gung-ho. And I think it's perhaps not sustainable because the local people are starting to feel the cost. They're losing sons. A lot of their sons have died this year. Pakistani sons. You go to villages and there's quite a number of people, young men, who've gone and fought the jihad in Afghanistan and have come back dead. And so that is having its toll. And this suicide bombing has also taking its toll. And so
these suicide bombers that have been detonating themselves in Afghanistan are from these border areas of Pakistan?
Some of them are clearly Afghans, but some of them are Pakistanis. I mean, we were going around finding families whose sons had been in madrasas or somehow got mixed up in some of these jihadi parties, and then they'd gone off and become suicide bombers, and the families were devastated and actually not aware of what was going on. So there's definitely a social toll there. So there's things going on that I think are slightly unpredictable, but I don't think it means in any way this is a popular uprising of Taliban in Afghanistan. I think it's an engineered political movement, and I think it might have difficulty in sustaining itself. Certainly the people, the local people, are feeling the cost in Pakistan as well as in Afghanistan.
Carlotta Gall, thank you very much. We wish you, I guess your recovery is moving along very quickly. We're glad about that. And thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you for calling.
Carlotta Gall joined us today from her vacation home in Johannesburg, South Africa. She's a reporter for The New York Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.